As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, welcome back to Full Time with Meg Linehan. You are listening to a show all about women's soccer on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Meg, your host, and I'm a national staff writer at the Athletic covering the NWSL and the U.S. women's national team. We are into the NWSL regular season now, and guess what? Portland is still really good at soccer, but Barcelona are also Champions League winners, and the Broncos upset FSU in the NCAA College Cup final. But today we're actually going in a slightly different direction as my coworker from The Athletic, Jeff Reuter, is here because I also just really wanted to talk to him about everything that has gone down in Columbus over the past week or so with the MLS club's rebrand and then their walk back of that rebrand, and figure out what lessons are there for the NWSL, and more importantly, talk about our relationship with history in American soccer. So yes, we will be talking about men's soccer, but I promise it will all make sense to you once we get there. But before we get started, as always, your reminder that you can directly support this podcast and all of our women's soccer coverage at The Athletic with your subscription. And best of all, with the start of the NWSL regular season, plus, you know, the NBA and NHL playoffs and all of those other normal things happening right now, you can subscribe for just $1 a month. Now, I think most of you who listen to this show on an even semi-regular basis know where I stand on your subscriptions, proving the value of women's soccer coverage. And we do have something very good brewing on our side of things here at The Athletic. I'll be able to share that relatively soon, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, make sure you get in on this dollar a month deal. If you need to set up a new subscription, you can do that by going to theathletic.com/fulltime. Again, you're showing your support for the podcast, for the coverage, and plus you get all of the other benefits of The Athletic to boot. That is theathletic.com/fulltime. All right. So the good news is that the pace of news did actually slow down a bit, at least compared to last week, but still plenty of things are happening. So here's what you need to know. Let's start with Champions League, as Barcelona just absolutely put on a show against Chelsea in the final on Sunday, winning 4-0. All four goals scored in that first half. Well, the first two were a little bit weird, let's be real, between this own goal and then a penalty kick that led to a bit of debate. But goals 3 and 4 were just pure, beautiful Barcelona and showed how they are on truly just a completely different level. Now, here's why that is also exciting. They are going to be in Portland this August as part of the Women's International Champions Cup. Of course, all right, time out. Full disclaimer from me, as you might have noticed, I was actually in the launch video for this tournament, as I also do some work with the ICC folks on a digital show called The Fixture. So, disclaimer aside, Barcelona and Lyon are heading to the US after the Olympics to play in this tournament with Portland Thorns FC and the Houston Dash, August 18th through the 21st. It starts with Barcelona versus Lyon and then Thorns versus Dash. Also, this NWSL versus NWSL game will not count as a league game, but then the winners face off in the final. Very much looking forward to it. Very much looking forward to being there. Actually, just being back in Portland for the first time in a very long time. All right, last week, Racing Louisville FC announced they had signed Ebony Salmon to a 2-year contract, and I said this in my season preview for The Athletic, but it feels like the perfect signing for this team when it comes to risk, right? It is a little bit risky, but her ceiling is super high. She's going to be really fun to watch, and I am personally just very ready to see what kind of partnership that she and Yuki Nagasato can develop. Plus, Rose Lavelle and Sam Mewis are on their way back to the U.S. after their contracts were up with Man City. Lavelle will join OL Reign as an allocated player and will start training on May 26th. She could play as soon as May 30th out in Tacoma against her former team, the Washington Spirit. The narratives will be strong with that one, of course. Mewis picked up some allocation money and signed a 2-year contract with the Courage, and much like Rose, will be available to play as soon as Friday, May 28th. One more NWSL item. The league picked up a pretty major sponsor thanks to MasterCard. The multi-year deal involves a few different elements, including some game day experience stuff, but will also feature some soccer-themed learning experiences as part of MasterCard's program for science, tech, engineering, and mathematics called Girls for Tech, but also some education for players about financial wellness, which I think is definitely a good thing. Finally, on Monday night, the Broncos outlasted FSU in the College Cup Final, first coming up with a late equalizer via Kelsey Turnbow, and then surviving two overtime periods and finally defeating FSU via penalty kicks 4-1. Now, if you watched, you were also aware that there was quite the alumni cheering section in the stands, and I actually talked to 2001 champs Daniel Slayton, Allie Wagner, and Leslie Osborne as they were waiting for their flight home to the Bay Area. There's a link to that story in the show notes. They were, watching them was almost as fun as watching the game, if not more so in a slightly specific way, but just a great time. Okay, so again, my coworker from the soccer vertical, Jeff Reuter, joins the show. Fun fact, we have also gotten the same tattoo, although in slightly different form, and you will learn all about that in this segment as well. Here we go. Hi, good morning. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, I'm here. This has been a career aspiration of mine since you launched this show, and I never thought I'd see the day because I don't know. I think it's just that I don't have a confident facial hair look, and I keep rotating it, and we're at the mustache. I was like, well, now it's never going to happen because I'm embracing a mustache in my late 20s, and here we are.
Yeah. It's great. You know, dreams come true. Dreams come true.
Yep, keep doing your thing, kids. You could be on a podcast hosted by one of your coworkers eventually.
Okay, so the reason I brought you on is because I wanted to kind of, you've been doing a lot of reporting about the team from Columbus that plays in MLS, who does That's not it. Necessarily know what their name is. I immediately wanted to call them the Crew, but then I was just like, listen, I've got to soften this in. And I'm just, one of the things that we have talked a lot about in terms of like on our meetings as a group, right, is just kind of the overall landscape of this, of MLS, but NWSL is also in the mix, right? USL as well. Just kind of this urge to rebrand, the urge to make something new, the urge to change everything and start it all over again. And we have seen a little bit of it on the NWSL side, but I did just want to start with kind of the Columbus saga a bit, because I do think it helps to understand, because I think it is so interesting to me, like the Columbus story has happened. And then like a month before, I had gone through all the Gotham FC stuff. That's and right. You could not have two more different reactions to rebrands. So let's talk Let's talk about Columbus, if you can do the Cliff's Note version of their journey through rebrand.
Sure. So this is the club's third rebrand ever. They had a crest adjustment in 2014. They dropped SC off of the name in 2018. And then without much forewarning nor much obvious reason to do so, they went ahead and changed from Columbus Crew to Columbus SC. I think that the rationale behind it, maybe we can get into it in a little bit later, but what ended up happening is that fans locally hated it, really did not resonate with it. They loved the Crew name. There's this fantastic story about a Nordica supporter member who was shown this the night before they ended up announcing it. And the supporter ripped off his shirt to show a tattoo of a Columbus Crew crest on his chest. There was someone else who was calling the club president a traitor, which is just very harsh when you're talking about soccer, but here we are. And yeah, it was truly struck a nerve in the wrong way with the fan base, which is the exact opposite of what you want to do with a rebrand. And it took about a week. And we've been hearing that this was, that there was no turning back, that they'd already spent seven figures on marketing considerations, on banners for the stadium, on promotions, all of this stuff, merchandise, where they would never consider changing it. And then at 9 p.m. Central, 10 Eastern local, on a Monday night, suddenly they say, hey, we're the Crew. Again, after a week. So Columbus SC played one game against the New England Revolution. They lost. And there you go. The New England Revolution are the best team in MLS.
Thank you for saying that as a longtime New England Revolution supporter. I did really enjoy the Revs tweet of forever undefeated against Columbus SC.
Can't change that.
I do want to detour for a second because I feel like SC as a term does not get enough love in this country. Like, if we're going to, I would kind of like to detour for a second because I don't fundamentally hate the idea that you would have SC instead of FC. That to me feels good and fun and stupid in a fun way and in an American way, right? Like we play soccer, right? Like correct. We don't, just also FYI, if you come into my mentions and you're like, it's called football, you're getting either muted or blocked depending on how annoying I find you.
Depends what was for lunch that day.
Yeah, it depends on my mood. Right now it's probably a block. But
it's a block day. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I just think like in terms of stuff that actually like can distinguish MLS or, you know, like I am still kind of surprised that there is not a single club that has embraced SC in NWSL just because it is kind of fun and different. And it also, I think, you know, a lot of them want that concept of an overall club, right? Especially the ones that have MLS and NWSL teams. There is certainly reason to embrace this idea of a club.
What's interesting about it, though, is that, like you said, in American soccer, they're seldom clubs, right? Yeah. It's usually a franchise or it is a team, maybe, because it didn't stem from the local YMCA or whatever. It stemmed from a millionaire billionaire who plopped an expansion flag into some rich soil or whatever. I think what's interesting, too, about this case is that the rationale behind going to Columbus SC, and SC is still on Columbus Crew at the tail end of it, so they are sticking with that part of it. But what's interesting is the rationale for them, as was the case in MLS with the Chicago Fire, with Club de Foot Montreal, when they ditched the Impact branding.
Club de Foot is never not going to be funny to me.
I just called them the Montreal Foot Club, so, you know, fans love it.
Yeah.
It won't ever not be funny to me either. But the thing is, the reasons behind this that MLS teams are saying, and I think that Louisville City ran into something similar last year in the USL, was they wanted to be seen as a global brand. And they wanted to have a greater reach. They wanted to have greater merchandise potential to resonate with fans across the globe. They're taking maybe the wrong lessons from the Premier League's global success and other leagues. But if you have SC in your name, you're going to run into the exact same sort of trolling inevitably. And people are going to say, how are you a global name? You're clearly an American soccer thing. So you're like still stuck in two minds with your own rebrand when you throw in SC. That said, I agree with you. It's more authentic. It's more, you play in Major League Soccer. So probably call yourself a soccer club. I think that that's a pretty good starting point.
Right. Yeah. Same for, I mean, National Women's Soccer League. Like we're not pretending that these things are football here in the US. Right. So I think your point is right. Like that there is this fine line between wanting these global aspirations. And I think we've also seen this in the NWSL, right? Like there have certainly been, I mean, you think about someone like Orlando or Portland, right? Mm-hmm. That has players from, and I mean, this goes for every single team, but players from multiple countries, the way that they can do outreach. Gotham FC is kind of the same way in terms of like, you know, someone like Naho Kawasumi unlocks Japan, right? There are ways to find new markets. There is this international streaming deal via Twitch. The exporting of the NWSL, I think, is a much easier sell than MLS right now. Like, if we want to talk about clubs that should be having global aspirations and thinking about, okay, what does our brand do to unlock a global fan base? Because I do, like, I think it's really easy to get lost in, like, the marketing weeds, right? Or, like, the... We had a very long off season, and I read a lot of really bad press releases about how everything was beautiful and game changing. You know, like, that's so, it. You know, you get lost in this business talk, but there is something very fundamental about, I mean, I'm currently wearing like a Venice shirt, right? Like, that there are people in other countries who are going to buy your stuff and wear your things and watch your team. Mm-hmm. And for me, NWSL, I think really does have, like, you can just see, like, the doors open.
Mm-hmm. I think that the Gotham one in particular makes so much sense, because if it is a global market, you know, you can talk about the, where do you play and are you actually based in New York, New Jersey? We can talk about that, but that's going to be associated with New York, right? And if you ask someone worldwide outside of the United States and Canada, to what images come to mind when you think of New York, they're not going to say, well, I think of the color sky blue. I don't think that was ever going to be one of their first 100 associations that they have with it. Now, would they say Gotham? Would they say, oh, well, you know, Batman skylines and all that stuff? Probably. I think that would come up well before the color sky blue. So in that sense, it makes a lot of sense, right? And that is really tapping into it, because then it's akin to a fashion release, or it's like when the WNBA and the NBA do their city collections, where like the Minnesota Lynx put out a First Ave inspired Stars jersey. It's really cool. It looks like you're at the outside of First Ave. It's locally relevant, but it also is internationally, it strikes a chord, and that's great. Yeah. So it's similar sort of approach, and that's okay. That's good. You can be really tailoring yourself to your local fans first, in a way that is aesthetically pleasing and relevant, I guess, beyond your local market.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the immediate places where my brain goes on that front is the Chicago Red Stars jersey, the Elevate jersey, right? Like, that is a Chicago shirt. But when you look at it, it's also just like, it was cool. The launch video was very cool, right? Like, there is kind of this, you are rooted in a place and you have this connection with the community, but also it's going to extend past this. I know both of us are definitely, I mean, the athletic soccer vertical in general is extremely targeted by Forward Madison, just as an entire concept.
That's right.
Like, I think that Forward Madison was actually perhaps a fever dream that was just designed to be targeted at the athletic soccer vertical.
They just hired somebody who was at my wife and my wedding as their head coach. So that feels right.
Okay.
I think it was.
Right. But just in terms of, like, that is a club that obviously is still playing games in Madison, Wisconsin. Do I watch any of them? No. Do I have three or four Forward Madison jerseys in my dresser behind me? Yes. Right. Am I aware? Like, do I also really enjoy that they troll our coworker Pablo literally every single game day with a Calm Before the Storm tweet? Absolutely. Yes. But, like, there are both very specific things that you can do that also allow you to unlock new audiences. And we have seen the power of kit launches and merch and all like that stuff does actually matter.
It does. It does. And I think that in MLS's case, to bring this back to Columbus for a second, they don't have as much autonomy to make these same sort of bold risks that the Red Stars, that Gotham, that Ford Madison can afford to make because it's single entity and they have a contract with Adidas to make all of their jerseys. And so the team that's dedicated to it says it's a 2-year project to be able to get a jersey from ideation to realization. They say that they're working on a lot all of the time. And so they can't possibly, even though you see clubs all around the world and in the United States that have Adidas partnerships with these stunning jerseys, you see them in the NWSL, you see them in the USL and MLS. I mean, they're really sick of hearing how much people rag on them for plain white jerseys. I know that for a fact, but they keep releasing plain white jerseys. So, yeah. You know, you control your own destiny. And so I think at that point, as these clubs like Chicago, like Montreal, like Columbus are looking at, okay, how do we branch out? How do we get people around the world to think about Columbus, Ohio, which good luck, but you know, like how do you do it? You rebrand, you get a new name, you make it so that you have something that's more versatile, that you can just put a big C on a crew neck sweatshirt. And maybe that's going to resonate with people. You take other risks at the expense of your own club history. And at this point, the league is in its 26th season. Columbus has been in the league for the entirety of the time. This is the 24th season for the Fire. This is the 10th season for Montreal in MLS, but Montreal had history dating back to the 80s as well. At a certain point, you have to actually give some sort of credence to where you've been once you've actually established that sort of thing. And what we saw in the case of Columbus is that the priority for ownership for the marketing department was how do we make this scale internationally rather than, hey, we've won a couple of MLS Cups with this name. We literally had
including
a save
the season
moment.
Before.
That's right. That's right. Which is baffling to me.
Right.
They're the defending champions. And you couldn't even say like the defending champion Columbus Crew. Because it's a different team for a week and right. It makes no sense. It made right. No sense.
I do want to also, as a fan again of another team that was an original MLS team, I have made a lot of jokes on Twitter about being ready to defend the crayon flag of the New England Revolution with my very life. But I also like, I think this speaks to, and the same goes for the women's side and the women's history of the game has been fractured, right? Like I've written about this a lot. Like we have gone through multiple leagues, right? You have franchises like Boston Breakers surviving through two and then falling apart in the NWSL. You have, you know, Western New York Flash coming in and out. You have the Chicago Red Stars coming in. You have Sky Blue, right? Mm-hmm. Surviving through a couple, holding on to that star above the Sky Blue crest from WPS days and then losing it during the rebrand to Gotham. But there is this, I just find it such a strange relationship of history with this sport, because also again, as someone who's originally from Boston, right, like the relationship of that city of Boston to its sports teams is so rooted in history. Like you think about the Red Sox, you think about the Celtics, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow the other two teams, so I'm going to go with the ones I know. No, but
those are good choices.
I mean, just being like raised on the Red Sox, right? Like this is what other sports leagues have the ability to do is like you are born into a fandom, right? Mm. It is passed down. For me, it's like grandfather to father to me, you know, like it is
totally
generational. And this is what MLS is just on the verge of some of that, right?
Yeah.
Right. NWSL is still ways off from getting kind of that generational turn in fandom, but all of this is rooted in history. And somehow in American soccer, there is this instinct of going, hello, we would like the new thing.
Right.
Hello, if we rebrand, we might lose 5,000 local fans, but we gain X number globally.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it is, you know, for lack of a better analogy, it is the whole, if you pull a lever, the train is going down two paths. which one is going to be the least destructive.
It's like those app game ads that you get where it's like, you have to draw the line so the lava doesn't hit the guy. Yes,
the poor guy, the poor bald mustached man with suspenders for some reason in the middle of a volcano. You have 10 seconds to save his life. It's just like that. Who came up with that steak, by the way? That is terrifying. That sounds autobiographical at some point. I think that we've been told, on the men's side of the game at least, because we also do have the Men's World Cup coming up in the United States, Canada, and Mexico in 2026. And I think that there are a lot of clubs who are confused why MLS isn't more globally relevant in its 26th year. And I think that they're looking at 2026 as, okay, this is it. This is the breakthrough. Everyone's going to be watching American soccer, and you're seeing it at all levels of the ecosystem. You're seeing it in the USL. You're seeing it in local leagues. You're seeing it in NISA. Like, it's, everyone has this like big circle on their year by year calendar that doesn't exist on 2026 saying like, this is when everything's going to click. Because I think since MLS was founded for the 1996 season, it has been trying to hype itself as the sport of the future, as a rising league, as a league of choice, as a league that is on the ascendancy. It's still, among men's leagues, probably the fifth most relevant league in the country. If I'm being generous, it is somewhere between the 10th and the 12th best top to bottom men's soccer league in the world at this point. Maybe it's like truly 10th. At this stage, but the point is, it hasn't made the leaps and bounds that I think that most American sports business people assumed it was going to make. I think that they looked and they said, okay, the NFL, great, globally relevant, totally fine. Major League Baseball, it's not world champions. I think that's the point. And so they're trying to find these other avenues to make it boom a little bit more. And I think at a certain point, it fosters like an inferiority complex almost within these clubs, within these leagues, where it's okay, we're not the best in our market. We're not the best in the world. So how do we change it? Merch. It's such an, like you said, with Ford Madison, like it's such an easy way to get people involved with your club when they're not even watching your club, and it's free advertising, promotion, what have you, free for you. You take their money, they pay you to be able to advertise for you. Like, what a gift. So I think that is now the approach. And as a result, there's a lot of overthinking in terms of, okay, well people aren't going to care if they just buy our jersey, what we did in the 2009 MLS season. And is that true? Probably shouldn't be, right? Like, the name Johnny Pesky means something to you, which probably means the world to Johnny Pesky's family. And, you know, like that sort of history, like you said, it is passed down. At a certain point, you want to be able to have that stories. That's how a league gets bigger. When you have these sort of larger than life personalities, when you have the players that you keep hearing about over and over in terms of like, oh yeah, but I saw Brian Escurry make that save in 99. It's like, oh, I didn't see it. I have to find it on YouTube. And it's like, oh, but she was so off her line. What are we talking about here? But it's like, yeah, but we didn't have VAR back then. So you get this whole, like, there is like serious non-monetized and sometimes monetized value in embracing your history. And I don't think you're seeing that on the men's side in this country right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think we are embracing it on the women's side at some points, but also trying to avoid it. And I mean, I think maybe it's just me because I very much care about WSA, the very first pro league in the US, and I have forced a lot of conversations about it, right? But I do think that it is very interesting in terms of, you know, like even thinking about what I was working on yesterday. So I talked to Ali Wagner, Daniel Slayton, and Leslie Osborne because they got a little rowdy at the NCAA championship game, and it was extremely enjoyable, and I'm very mad that I wasn't there. So then they called me from the airport. But
love it.
You know, one of the things that we're all kind of keeping an eye on, and some, like, we kind of danced around on this call is, you know, there is this move to bring NWSL via expansion to the Bay Area. Yeah. And the Bay Area has a history with professional women's soccer, the Bay Area Cyber Rays, right? Like, which, A, if we want to talk about great ridiculous team names from the past.
Cyber Rays. Yeah.
Cyber Rays are like extremely up there in terms of like, that is one, if I have a next eBay goal, it is trying to find a vintage. I have exactly one WSA jersey and like that is my next project. Can I find a Cyber Rays jersey? Because I deeply need one. They are ridiculous. But there is this history and like there is kind of this tradition, right? And NWSL is not the only thing that has existed in this country.
Right. And there is always that concern, I think, in the early years of, is this the iteration that's going mm-hmm. to last?
Yeah.
And so then you don't want to cling too much to remember that league, remember that league, remember that league, because you're trying to establish yourself.
Right.
Which I understand. So then the history becomes the players, right? Or the coaches, I guess. But much more the players. I don't think that people are ever there's like one coach per league, as I'm thinking about it after saying that really, really stupidly. There's like one coach per league that actually gets this mythical status, and the rest are all like, yeah, good coach. It's the players. It's totally the players. Like, right. you have your cult followings, you have your heroes, you have your Yukis, you have your players that everyone is just like adores, right?
And will did you continue. Say they have your Yukis as in Yuki
I did.
Nagasato?
I
okay,
did.
Amazing.
but like you have these sorts of players who are like just lightning rods, and regardless of where they play, if they move to an expansion club, like that's okay, we'll just follow. And then credit to Racing also for just totally leaning in, embracing it, and printing.
They have realized, I think, very quickly that Yuki Nagasato is just like, it's an experience, and you're just along for the ride, and you were just gonna you were just gonna roll with it, and she's amazing.
That's right, and it's fantastic. Like that has yeah. value. That is right. also something that's going to resonate with fans, because you're getting in on the joke, you're enabling it, you're embracing it, right? And you're making yourself so accessible in such an organic way, which still has monetary considerations. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard, but a lot of teams in a lot of leagues continue to find ways to step in their own path.
Right. So one of the areas that we did kind of overlap a bit is Louisville in terms of their rebranding. And one of the things that I really like to bring up with them is they immediately change course, right? Brad Estes comes and is like, we did a bad thing. Sorry. And we will listen to you. And I think one of the real key things that we have seen that works, although I think it also provides its own challenges, right? Just in terms of like, you know, the fan base is not necessarily going to be like this cohesive, unified thing, but is right. bringing trusted supporters into the process.
Yes.
And so Louisville Part 2 worked really well, I think, for them, because there were groups. Gotham FC, like even early into that, someone who is in their supporters group had forwarded me an email, and there was a whole survey, like, what names stick out to you? Like, when you think about this, what do you, you know, so it's just even getting kind of the lay of the land of, does the Hudson River as a concept appeal to you? Does Gotham as a concept appeal to you? And just trying to figure out like what is resonating with the people who are actually going to show up to your games.
Right.
It feels like such a basic thing that we should be like, oh, maybe the people who actually pay us money to come watch us play should at least get not necessarily a major vote, but we right. should be talking to them.
Yeah. Some consideration, right? Like just bounce ideas off of them. And if they're like, oh, that's garbage, probably listen to that with a little additional weight, right? Because these are you would assume these are the fans that you're inviting to these meetings, have been there for a while, have been vocal in their support, have been proactive in promoting it, not necessarily as the like, hey, tomorrow there's a game between, you know, our team and this opponent, yeah. like, but more in a way of like tweeting during every game, even when you're home and away.
Right.
So then Twitter has more of engagement, or posting on Instagram, like them in their jersey with the field and say, grass looks great today or whatever. Unless it's turf. And then, you know, that's a little bit better. So then that fan's opinion should matter. That should be relevant. It should help you in that path. And I think that with Louisville, they started with the right intentions, which was, we are launching a club in the NWSL, and we want to make sure that the brands I still don't understand why they can't just be one club, and why we can't do, you know, like we have the same name and the same crest and you're cheering for the same thing. But I also understand that you really want to get it right when you're launching an NWSL club. And sometimes if Louisville City maybe just wouldn't sound right, you know, in a different ecosystem, but they wanted to make sure that the badges, like, were in conversation with each other, I guess, to use something I'm sure a marketer said, and actually resembled each other, complemented each other. And the first draft just didn't work. And I think at that point, if I'm not mistaken, the rumor was still proof.
Yes.
I think when they first did that rebrand. So then people also were like, okay, well, then what does this have to do with whiskey? So there was a lot of confusion. They were able to bring in the right designer. They were able to bring in some more fans. They were able to take more time with it. And I think my thing too is just take your time. I don't understand. Anytime people, teams seem caught unaware by the reaction, you probably should have taken enough steps where you're not surprised by the result. Like, you should never be surprised by the reaction. It should be looks cool, old fans complaining about it, right? And eventually coming around to it. Ideally, that's your progression. But when you're having pieces in like every major publication talking about how you have turned your back to your fans, that's probably not what you set out to do.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
What I also find interesting, so I'm just thinking about, again, the Revs, right? A team that still has this old school logo. I think there have been some conversations about, like, do we not have this crayon flag, right?
Is it our turn?
And what I find really interesting is that I think that there is such a potential to have multiple brand things. And I get the simplicity of just wanting the crest and being done, but one of the things that just me personally as a Revs fan, like one of the things that I was really drawn to was always like the flag of New England, right? With the pine tree. And like, it's a little tough now because I also think like white nationalists have seen it and gone like, oh, we like that. And I'm like, no, that's not for you.
Nope.
Don't do that. Don't like that. But like back, you know, in 2012, when I was still in that area and getting very, very drunk at Revs games and, but like that was a thing where if they like did a t-shirt or whatever, or like if the Midnight Riders did a t-shirt, like that was something where I was like, no, this is good. And it also fills into this larger landscape of what the Revs can be, right? Like you have the crest, but you can have other visual identity pieces that you can like bring in and out, you know, like it doesn't have to be all or nothing of, I still like in the Columbus Crew thing, I just can't get over that little like goatee on the sea. Like, yeah. That's the part of it that's still just like, I look at it and I just go, I don't know what that is.
Unfortunately, that has been axed. They have shaved the goatee off the crest. It was probably time. So what you're telling me, though, is if the Revs rebranded to Boston SC, but the crest was Dodso.
I mean, if it's Dodso, then we're going to have to like have like a meeting just to know as we are two of the three athletic employees with this tattoo.
What would you do? Like, you're stuck because now it's like, okay, think of all of the jerseys I can get with Dodso. How cool is that?
I mean, to be fair, Dodso, I think, would make a great crest, but also I'm just kind of like, I don't know if I want you to have this. Also, half the joy of Dodso, and neither of us have this in our tattoos. Maybe also after I say this, we should explain what Dodso is for folks who might have missed that article. But they're in this trademark thing that you found. It also has the lovely italicized line of dead/abandoned, which is my favorite detail about Dodso.
Same, right?
Well, also not one that I was willing to get tattooed on my body.
Yeah, I know. And that the hard part there is how, I mean, I could have because I got this in jumbo. And I supersized my Dodso. Dodso, for those who are unaware, Pablo Maru and I were amidst all of the rebranding stuff. And I think this was right after Racing released their branding and they had filed the trademark. And there were some intrepid fans and journalists in Louisville who were able to find the name before it was announced, because that's just a thing that's always going to happen. They have to file the trademark. Yep. Some leagues are really cloak and dagger about it and will find a way to make sure the trademark doesn't get publicly listed until the day after. Others will do it beforehand. The ones that do it beforehand are pretty easy to fish out. And we were going through the history of American soccer on this trademark, the trademark registry, like the National Trademark Registry, looking for the dumbest, funniest, weirdest trademarks. And we found stuff like an MLS amusement park that was in the works in 1996 that had like the most disgusting name I've ever heard. Club Tijuana had like a promotional push that said "We are soccer" with 3 exclamation marks, which was just a little aggressive. But we also found that there was one for the Boston Revolution that was filed in 1995 as the New England Revs were considering whether it'd be Boston or New England. And they must have just had to have an image associated with it. So it's this little like Life is Good t-shirt inspired dog. I'm going to say a terrier who's like walking.
Yeah, it could be a Boston Terrier. That makes sense.
Which would make a ton of sense, right?
Yeah.
And has these huge Wayfarer sunglasses on, is just bopping along at its own rate, might have a stopwatch on, might be its paw pad. There's a lot of argument about that these days among the cultural masses and millions who are thinking about Dodso on the daily. And dead and abandoned underneath it, which is just, again, the best detail of this that just doesn't quite look right on a tattoo. It's a little aggressive. So that's Dodso. And that is like my favorite American soccer thing I've ever discovered.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got it on
if,
my body.
If the Revs took like a real, real right turn and decided, okay, we're going to rebrand as Boston SC, right?
That's right. Yep. That's right.
That's
with
right. Dodso, the then I'd be like, oh no. You've done two things very targeted at me. I would have to think about it.
I think
I would
so,
really
right?
have to think about it.
But
to be fair,
theory,
I'm not like super attached to the Revolution as a name, like the Revs. Like I like Revs. I don't feel very strongly about Revolution again.
I think
now
this
just
is
like,
the first time I've ever heard you say Revolution in full.
Yeah, I don't.
In over 2 years of working together, I think it's always been Revs.
Yeah, it's the
sure.
Revs to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot to consider, but in theory, this would be using fan opinions to say, oh, that dog's amazing. Yes, that's better than a crayon flag.
Right,
of course, we're getting Dodso.
Yeah, that's the trick, is getting the fans involved. That I think that is like, just if you want something to go over well, like, try this one simple trick.
This one, which doctors hate, which is talk to fans.
Like that's it. It does, again, like it does not have to be super hard, but that is, I think honestly, like that is the one, like that's our SEO headline of this thing. Try this one simple trick that marketers hate.
That's right. That's
right. Talk to the fans.
It just makes sense because I think ultimately you can talk about wanting to be a global brand. It's a good ambition, don't get me wrong. But I think that if you're looking at any country, it is very, very rare that the true, like, quote, global brands of soccer are in provincial towns, we'll say, or are in mid-sized cities. Like, it is like the Lyons, the Paris, the Barcelona, the Londons, right? As you're looking at the clubs that are continually in the Champions League finals. It is in the United States, LA, New York. They're trying to make Miami into a thing on the men's side. Good luck with that. We'll see how it goes, right? Like, maybe it will work, maybe it won't. But there are only so many cities that truly are global. I think Chicago has that potential, to be fair. Houston hasn't been able to figure it out, but I think that's already a little too far down the list, even though it's fifth in American markets. So if you can't be a global brand, there's nothing wrong with being, to use a word that Silicon Valley loves, a challenger brand, a disruptor brand. And you are so cool with your branding and you are so in tune with what your fans want that anyone outside of your fan base is still going to be envious and still admire it and buy it or follow them, right? I mean, like AS Roma, I know Rome is a proper like global city, but they're not like one of the most competitive clubs in Italy on either side of the game. And they still have such a strong presence in the United States because of, you know, some decisions that they made in social, in design, which have just worked really well.
Yeah. So, they got me. I mean, to be fair, I did my study abroad in Rome. So like I was already kind of primed,
Yeah. And now you're wearing Venice. So
no, I just really liked it as a shirt. I was like, I have a Roma. I dragged Marjorie into the Roma store when we were in Rome on vacation in 2017. I was like, hello, we're going into this 3-level store on the main shopping street in Rome.
What's on the second level?
I think the third level is like trophies and just kind of like some, like they have kind of, you know, like, here's our history again. Oh, here's our history.
Like a museum. I thought they were like selling their trophies. Like, please someone get these off our hands.
Yeah. But like they have, you know, like videos up on the screen, but you know, like, that again, they use shopping. They use the brand in a way to bring people in off the street. Mm-hmm. And then they say, look at this thing that we have done. Look at our history.
Right.
Wouldn't you like to be a part of it?
Yeah. It's not hard. It shouldn't be hard. I mean, the hardest part of that, of course, is build history.
Yes. Survive long enough to build history.
That's right. And you can't speed that process up, but you can continue to, I don't know, kind of big up where you've been. You can really make sure you're documenting where you are right now so that fans have those access points that they hold on to for years. It's possible. It's definitely possible. And in the meantime, I think that there also is a tendency for sports fans to really like a new team in any league because they're seeing it from the beginning to wherever they go. So that even if you're not like a huge fan, or like you're not truly like tied into Racing Louisville, like I remember watching their expansion draft on Twitch. And so I will be able to say like, oh, I remember when that player was picked and everyone was like, oh, that's kind of a weird choice. And now they're starting every single game, right? Like you can kind of start to build that sort of immediate history and be so accessible if you're that transparent that you can get by without the history component. And yeah, there are some lean years in the middle where you're no longer new and not yet historic, which was the first draft of that pop song. But it's possible. It is definitely possible.
Yeah. All right. I think that is, we've solved the problem for MLS clubs. All they have to do is listen to this podcast and they will now know the secret. This goes for NWSL, right? Like, I think it really is just kind of this very interesting American approach that is shared on both sides of the game, where there is kind of this history of not necessarily embracing your own history.
That's right. And overthinking what that means to get around that.
Yeah. All right, Jeff,
before you let me go, yes. Sneakers, how did it go this morning?
Oh, it did not. Yeah. So when I texted Jeff about this podcast, I was also in the middle of trying to use my phone to win a pair of low dunks on sneakers. And it did not work because it never does.
Never works. I swear that they only have like one shoe per size. One pair. Yes. It'd be amazing if it was just one shoe. Like, yeah, you got your last.
Just get a box. It's one shoe. Yeah. Yeah. There's, I have now, my new most dangerous app is Goat, and yep. I have to start considering about deleting it off of my phone, except in like when I really know what I'm looking for, because it is one of those things where like I'll open it up at 10 o'clock and I'm like, oh,
that might be there. That might be a good desktop only. Yeah. There are some sites, some apps that I can't have, like always like shopping related.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if this is here and I'm, yep. If I am just like winding down for the night, if I have just been at a bar, whatever, now that I can do that again,
yeah,
I'm vaccinated, then I'm just scrolling. Etsy was this for me, actually. Because then I also had this hook of like, oh, it was made by some artisan, whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's just like a cheaply printed t-shirt by Gildan or whatever. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah, okay. Yeah. There are, I mean, my new struggle is also like, you know, I don't get taken by a lot of Instagram targeted ads that I see, but there was one for a very nice sparkling water seltzer thing, and they definitely got me. And we now order like every once in a while, this like very nice sparkling water. And like, I was just joking to Marjorie this morning. I was like, that goddamn Instagram ad, it got me. Like they got me.
We've come full circle, because this shirt was actually a targeted Instagram ad. by Mahogany Memories, and it's fantastic. I loved it, and I was like, oh, this looks so cool. And it's it comes in multiple colors. Like, I could have gotten in black, but I have too many black t-shirts, so I got one that is like salmon, and I like it.
Jeff, please tell people where they can find you.
You can find me.
It's been a long week. It is Wednesday before noon, and it has already been a long week for both of us, I think.
It sure has. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff Reuter, R-U-E-T-E-R. You can find everything I do at The Athletic. And this weekend, you can find me at a Red Stars game, because I'm going to Chicago. And then it turns out they're making a big special reveal that I don't know if we can say what it is or not. So
I mean, it's their jersey. That's what it
is. Okay, good. I wasn't sure if that was still hidden.
It's pretty easy to read between the lines. I hope you go hang out with the new Red Stars owner, Sarah Spain, because she's apparently throwing quite a party in the parking lot. So sure, you should go check that out.
Yeah, I think that...
I think there is going to be Malort involved, so just, like, be aware of that.
I've been training, though. That was my smart play, was I got a bottle of Malort from a friend from Chicago, and I have been able to ensure that I can take a shot of Malort and not show that I'm not from the area. So I think I'll be set. I really do.
All right, report back this weekend.
Will do. I might wait till the morning after. It might be the afternoon after, if it's okay. Malort, but I'll let you know.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Thank you, Jeff, for the time. Godspeed on your trip to Chicago. Please enjoy and tell local 134 I said hello.
Will do.
Thank you to Jeff. Everyone, please send us better vibes for us, for one of us even, to hit on sneakers once. I'd like to say I believe in us, but the app is the devil. So actually, I don't believe in us at all. Actually, you know what? Send us vibes for Goat to sponsor us before I literally have to delete that app out of my own financial wellness and its needs. All right, one more thing. And as always, I'm honestly terrible at the self-promotion part. I finally tweeted about this because Shireen Ahmed yelled at me in a text message. But also, I wrote a book, which is wild and very different, but it is out on June 1st, and it is called Secrets of Success: Insights from Megan Rapinoe's World-Class Soccer Career. Now, just to warn you, it is definitely a little bit more for a casual audience that might be tuning in just to like World Cups or the Olympics, right? But I do think there's also some pretty helpful reminders in there about how to be a better person and lift others up. So hopefully you will still check it out. It's available via all the usual spots, Kindle, you know, all that kind of stuff. I have more info on my website at meglinahan.com. If you order via Bookshop or your local indie bookstore, I definitely recommend going local. Okay. As always, the home for the show is at fulltimepod.com, where you can find links to all the major podcast platforms. If you're enjoying the show, as always, that your ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts truly do make a difference. And one more call for this, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just $1 a month right now at theathletic.com/fulltime. My name is Meg, and you have been listening to Full Time with Meg Linehan. You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at It's Meg Linehan and my work at The Athletic. Full Time does not exist without the work and support of senior podcast producer Michael Zimmerman. From The Athletic, I'm Meg Linehan, and thank you for listening.